Thank you very much. I'd like to say at the beginning, I do have Brad Rippey with me. I know most of you have heard Brad's name. He's the chief, not the chief meteorologist, someday maybe, but he is the ag meteorologist at the World Agriculture Outlook Board and has primary responsibility for covering the United States. So if you have any weather questions, he's the guy to talk to. What I'd like to do in the brief 20 minutes or so that we've got, if it's okay, is just hit some of the highlights of the report that we did this past Friday. It was the May 10th, the lockup report. The May report is big for us because that's the one where we switched to the so-called out year. In this instance, we're looking at 2013-14, and I'll keep my remarks pretty much to the 2013-14 outlook. I'd like to talk a little bit about wheat, corn, soybeans, and cotton, and maybe a little bit about meat if we have time. I'd like to leave a few minutes at the end for any questions you might have. Please. So if I get to 10 or 15 minutes here, I'm going to stop and then let you guys just ask whatever you have in mind. That's all right. Let me just say at the in terms of world wheat production, the report the other day showed that we're looking for a wheat output, global wheat output in 2013-14 to exceed 700 million tons. That's the first time we've seen a number that big. Now, all countries, pretty much all countries, except the U.S., are showing production increases, notably significant increases in the so-called FSU countries. You might remember that in 12-13, some of these countries experienced pretty severe drought. The current circumstances outside the U.S. Have looked really good. So we're looking for a big recovery in the FSU 12 countries, looking for about a 9% reduction in the U.S. Now, you may know that one of the things that kicks off the 13-14 or the out year for us is the crop production report that comes out of the National Ag Statistics Service. And they, of course, reported winter wheat production the other day. I think that was right about 40.4 million tons, and we added to that our estimate of spring wheat production at 15.5 to come up with the total of about 56 million tons in terms of tons. Now, I'll talk, when I'm talking international, I have to talk tons because that's the way the rest of the world talks. But when I talk U.S., I'll be talking bushels and bales and things that we recognize. Let me just say a few words about the U.S. wheat supply and demand situation. We all know that we've not had the best spring in the U.S. According to what we saw coming from NAS the other day, we do expect to see more abandonment this year than we have in the past. And we're looking to yields to be somewhat down at 44.1 bushels per acre, giving us a production of about a little bit over 2 billion bushels, 2.057 billion bushels to be exact. Now, one of the repercussions from the fact that we've got as I'll talk about here in a moment, corn, greater corn crop will be that we'll be, do less wheat feeding, substantially less wheat feeding is what we anticipate this year, down about 19% from last year. All in all, the situation is fairly stable. We're looking at a beginning stock situation. The wheat situation is fairly stable, 731 million bushels starting the year. And if our numbers come to pass, looking at about 670 million bushels at the end of the year. So some tightening, a little bit tightening of stocks, but nevertheless, we keep it a stocks-to-use ratio right around 30%. However, we will see that price come off. We do expect to see the price come down about a dollar. We're recording $7.80 in a 12-13 year, and we would expect the average farm price to drop to about $6.80. In 13-14, and it's largely attributable to the pretty large foreign crops that I've just mentioned and to the bigger corn crop, which I'll talk about momentarily. So I know there's a lot of interest in that because of what happened last year. Just parenthetically, I might mention that you probably remember, but last year the U.S. wheat crop pretty much escaped the drought situation because the drought really started order about June 1, and the water just cut off for the most part, and it was a disastrous year. Let me say a little bit about world corn production. We're looking at world corn production now right at about 966 million tons. Again, I'm talking world here. The previous record, interestingly enough, was 883 million tons. So we're looking for a huge corn crop coming worldwide at this point. If that number comes to pass, that means that the world production will be up about 85 million tons, 83 or 85 million tons from the preceding year. It's just a huge increase. And most of that increase is right here in the U.S. The U.S. crop is expected to be up about 31% in terms of tonnage here, 359 million tons. It's an increase of 85 million tons. Now, to put that in perspective, it's interesting. I was looking at the numbers the other day. The increase, potential increase here in the U.S., assuming we don't have another weather catastrophe like we did last year, that 85 million tons is equivalent to the entire production of Brazil and South Africa. So in essence, it's like having another Brazil and South Africa in the world if these numbers come to pass. It's just an amazing situation in terms of the potential corn production for the U.S. Looking at the implications for the U.S. S&D, back to bushels. In terms of bushels, we're looking at a U.S. corn crop yield of about 158 bushels per acre. Now, you might remember that at the Outlook conference, we were using 163.6. And that's based upon some very extensive modeling work that's been done by ERS over the past several years, and we feel pretty confident that was a good number back in February. But given the late planting that we've seen this year, we think there will have some repercussions, and if, according to the model results, it will drop to, currently we're looking at 158 bushels per acre. Still a very good yield, but down considerably from the previous level, but up very sharply from the 123 bushels an acre, 123.4 bushels an acre to be exact, that we recorded in 2012-13. If these numbers come to pass, I just might mention, too, that, of course, you got, in addition to the yield, you have acreage, which per the NAS numbers, the acreage this year will be not the record high, but I'm told it'll be the highest acreage number in the U.S. since 1936. So you're looking, you have to go back quite a few years to see the kind of acreage we've got in the U.S. Beginning stocks, as you well know, are very, very tight. Corn stocks are very, very tight in this country, and that's holding the price. It's held certainly the price for the old crop. It looks like production could come in at about 14.1 billion bushels. That's 31% above the beginning level, and that would, in fact, be a record crop if that actually happens. Feed and residuals, you might expect, will be up. We've got that up about 21% this year, primarily because of the, obviously, you've got a cheaper feed source in terms of corn. We'll talk about price here in a moment. We're looking at the ethanol production to be up, or corn used for ethanol production to be up slightly, up about 5% to 4.85 billion bushels, and exports at about 1.3 billion bushels, down from last year's really, really low export level for the U.S. at 750 million bushels. When I'm saying last year, I'm talking 12-13. Technically, 12-13 is not over. We're in that part of the year where we've got 12-13 to finish and 13-14 to worry about. So makes for some interesting analysis, believe me. But it does look like if these numbers at the 14.1 billion bushel crop comes to pass and all the utilization numbers are about what we think they will be, we have the potential here to rebuild stocks from 759 million bushels up to a little bit over 2 billion bushels. Very, very, it's amazing turnaround, very sharp turnaround is quite possible, giving us a price sharply lower than the $6.90 record price that we're likely to see for 12-13, down to $4.70. So we do expect to see the average price to drop rather precipitously as a result of the much larger crop and the increase in the ending stocks level, at least as we're currently projecting. Now, some people might say, well, how's that going to happen given the very slow planting pace that we've seen to date? At the time of lockup, I can tell you that if you look at the major states, such as Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, and South Dakota. There's eight that we're looking at in particular. Those eight states account for roughly 75% of U.S. corn production. Those states had only succeeded in planting around 8 or 8.5% by the time we got the lockup. Everybody knows that May 15th or thereabouts is a key date in terms of planting in the U.S. in an attempt to beat the August heat. And if you look at the analysis that we did, though, what we have concluded is we think it's highly possible that the next time, within the next week or so, we'll see roughly 60% of the corn crop planted. There is good planting weather out there right now in much of the corn belt. If you look at the historical record on that, it's interesting to note that in the past 32 years, 17 of those years, the U.S. farmers have managed to plant 50% of the corn crop or more in 17 of those 32 years. So they have remarkable capacity to plant today with the technology and the equipment that they have available to them. And that's one of the reasons we're supporting that price or supporting that production at a fairly sharp or strong level. Now, I might add that one of the reasons we do this lockup on a monthly basis, we'll have to see where we are when we get to the June 12th lockup. See what the circumstances are there, but what we're looking at now, it looks like it's highly possible. Let me say a few words about soybeans. Soybeans, we're also looking for record production globally. In this instance, we're also looking for a slight record in the U.S. Worldwide, looking at 285.5 million tons. It's up about 6% from the previous year in the U.S. in terms of tonnage. 92.3 million tons, up about 12% here in the U.S., owing to some yield recovery that I'll talk about in a moment. Nothing remarkable to look at here. Everywhere we're looking, we're seeing pretty good conditions worldwide. Everybody knows that, not to confuse the issue here, but what's being harvested in South America now is 12-13. What we're talking about here in the is 13-14, so we're talking about a projection that has to do with planting that will occur this fall. 12-13 crops, though, have been very, very good, as you well know, in South America. It's one of the reasons that they have come on very, very strong planting in terms of their harvest. Just might mention one interesting side note here, China. We got China in at 12 million tons. Kind of a pitiful number compared to what they consume, really, in terms of soybeans. But if you look at China's production over the years, you'll see them right at 15, 14, 13, 12 million tons for the last number of years. You don't see very much growth there. To me, the intriguing point here is this year China will import about 59 million tons, and we think they will import 69 million tons in 13, 14. Obviously, not all that's coming from the U.S. It's coming from both South America and the United States. I guess we'll get 40-some percent of the market if things are normal. This year, we probably did a little bit better owing to the fact that in 11-12, you might remember, South America had its drought problems, certainly not in 12-13, but we, as a result of that, we did export more to China than we would have otherwise because of that circumstance. U.S. soybean balance sheet, 44.5 bushels an acre, a crop of 3.39 billion bushels, up 12%, as I said before. Beginning stocks at 125 million bushels, and ending stocks at 265. So we have the potential here to go from a stocks-to-use ratio of 4% to about 8.1%. And as you can well imagine, that in combination with a big corn crop is going to result in a very sharp decrease in price down about 26 or 27%, down to 1050 from the 1430 record that we're looking at the recording for the current year. So we'd see that price coming off rather sharply. Cotton, it's one of the few crops where the U.S. number here is actually down a little. What's happened here, as you well know, is cotton has lost acreage to other crops. They're more enticing to producers right now, better returns, so they've lost some acres to corn and soybeans. Looking at a U.S. Cotton crop here at 14 million bales, world production 117.8 million bales, world to be down about 2.6%, and the U.S. down about 19%, because primarily because of the reduction in area. U.S. cotton, looking at U.S. Cotton yields at about 800 pounds an acre. It might seem odd to you that it's sharply below the 887 pounds per acre that we recorded in 12-13, but remember we had abandonment, huge abandonment in last year especially because of the dry land situation in Texas. So we lost a lot of the dry land crop, and a lot of the not dry land crop remained, so you had higher yields than what was left. Assuming abandonment this year about 16% compared to last year's 24% nationwide, we're looking at a crop of about 14 million bales. Now, we do see a tightening of the ending stock situation here, going from about 4 million bales at the beginning level to about 3 million bales at the end level, and that will give us some price support. We're looking at 78 cents a pound for 2013-14 versus 72 cents a pound for 2012-13. So we do see some tightening there. One of the intriguing things that's going on worldwide now is the situation with regard to China. China has, there seems to be no end to their imports right now. They've imported far more than what they need for a year. I mean, it's just amazing what they've done. As a matter of fact, for 12-13, we actually had to up our numbers for 12-13 to 13.25 million bales, but we do think eventually they're going to have to slow down. So in 13-14, we're looking at a lower import number by China, and we've reduced our overall export forecast by about 13% down to 11.5 million bales for the out year for 13-14. Finally, one word about meat. I guess one of the good news aspects of this, from the if you're a livestock producer, things are looking a little bit better. You got more corn, you got lower price. The corn price is coming, so the feed cost should be looking a little better, and they will be looking a little better if these numbers play out. Pork and broiler producers see that coming. Both of them are looking for an expansion in 2014. We're looking at about 2.3% expansion in broiler or in pork production, and about 2.9% expansion in broiler production. Beef production, on the other hand, will continue to decline, and the reason for that is, among other things, we've got very low inventory to start with. But we are seeing, we do expect to see more heifers being held back now, to hopefully come back into, at some point, get into an expansionary mode at some point. But at this point, it looks like beef production will be down about 4%. We do think steer prices will hold really firm at 2014 at $133 per hundredweight. Hog prices at $58 per hundredweight, down a little bit owing to the increased production. And broiler prices have held very well. Right now they're over a dollar. $101.09 per pound, to be exact, a little bit over a dollar for the 13-year on average. And it looks like those prices, however, would drop to about 92 cents, giving the nearly 3% increase in production. Now, with that, what I'd like to do is stop. I talked about 15 minutes, and I see that you have a question back here. I know he's been dying to ask a question. I can see the hand.
Roger Ward from Central Illinois WLBS. We haven't got the thing planted yet.
Yeah, I know.
But given the possibility of very tight old stocks of corn and where they are located, and given the late start to the planting season, thus any harvest that could occur that has occurred in the past 2 to 3 years, late August, early September, while we as farmers are concerned about supply, I'm concerned about we could not have corn available near ethanol plants for that late August through September period. What would it do to the demand side of the equation if we were to lose anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks of ethanol production from domestic corn?
Losing the ethanol production? One thing to keep in mind about ethanol production in general is one of the constraining factors to the overall ethanol production situation has been the decline in gasoline consumption, basically. I don't know how much these guys have in terms of stocks. I don't know that they carry stocks, really. I think it's pretty much feeding the market directly. My guess would be that the price of corn to those suppliers or those ethanol producers, you would say, would in fact be sharply higher, and they'll probably look to that. And that would, in fact, my guess is that in those circumstances, they may choose or elect to just slow their production down. We've seen that in the past, where they tend to regulate their production depending upon the corn availability. If the corn's not there, then they got a problem in terms of getting it there.
If that would be about 400 million bushels in 1 month's production, correct?
Where you're talking specifically, I'm not sure. Well, if you look at it that way, yes, that's one way of looking at it. If you're looking at 5 points.
Back into the supply, that would be disastrous for prices.
Would be disastrous for prices? I don't know that it would be disastrous for prices. We're looking at the balance sheet now, and we're coming out with the price we're looking at now, taking in all these factors have been considered, including the factors you're talking about. I'm sure the committee is well aware of the same factors you're talking about. And my guess is to what extent they can. That's getting a little bit fine-tuning when you start talking about specific locations and specific prices, specific plants. So I'd be hesitant to say how much they've got, the Interagency Commodity Estimates Committee has in there, but I'm sure they're well aware that there's going to be a tightness. Everyone's been talking about the potential tightness. There's no doubt that's recognized. What these committees do, they will look at prices by month. I'm talking to you about the national average. I'm not talking to you about what they're going to see at that point. So if I were to look at to lay out the exact prices they've got for every month, I'm sure you're going to see some tightness being reflected in the prices of what's actually available at that time. But then when you get to the end, you're also going to see that price come down dramatically if these numbers come to pass when that big production comes on. You're looking at the whole year. That's what I'm saying, and so my guess would be, and I don't recall exactly what prices the committee has in there, but I can tell you they have a month-by-month estimate of what they think it's going to be, and then they wait that average to come out with the overall price that I'm talking about here. So that kind of tightness would be anticipated and shown in the numbers. So whatever's there is there. Yeah. Yes, sir.
I'm Jeff Downing with the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. Some of the industry had some questions last year about the numbers for total disappearance, especially as it pertained to livestock feed use and exports and ethanol demand. Could you explain the formulas through there and why the industry might have thought one thing when the USDA said another?
Well, there has been. I readily acknowledge that there's been a lot of issues with regard to that. What usually happens is that the actual stocks numbers, the quarterly stocks numbers that NAS reports doesn't match up to what people think they ought to be. We have the same problem, to be honest with you, at the board. We have to figure out what that means to us also. I will tell you that it's something you already know. There is no direct measure of feed use in this country. Okay, we back into that number. Okay, there just isn't. Now, the other numbers, we have a pretty good fix on in terms of we know the ethanol produced. We have some idea of how much corn it takes to produce ethanol. We know what the exports are. We know all these other numbers. So in the end, the feed use number becomes a residual. And when the disappearance pattern does not fit what people expect, including us, we have to adjust to that. So it's not easy. And I'll just tell you, we have too had same issues. The stocks numbers that you see quarterly and the annual estimate that we do, there's two separate issues going on here. The stocks numbers are coming out of the National Ag Statistics Service by actual count. If you talk to Joe Prasaki and company, which I'm sure you have, Joe, believe me, Joe's right above us. We talk to him all the time. Joe, that's not what we expected to see. Jerry, the numbers are what they are. Okay, that's what he keeps telling me. This is what they are. The other thing I would mention on that is it's not a great revelation that the quarterly disappearance pattern is different, far different than one would expect. If you go back and look at the numbers historically, it's very difficult to understand how come animals can eat so much in one quarter and the next quarter eat virtually nothing. Okay, we're having the same problem. So there are some issues here which we're trying to work our way through. We're in constant contact with NAS about it. But we take the numbers as NAS reports to us, and I think NAS does, in my personal view, having worked with NAS for many, many years, is that they're very straightforward, and they what Joe says is correct. They give you what they count. and they're giving you what the farmers are reporting to them. Now, if there are issues with regard to what the stocks numbers that are reporting are being reported to NASS, I don't know what they are. That's an issue you'd have to speak with NASS about.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I got a question for Brad. Since you brought it, can I drag him over to the microphone?
Okay. Well, yeah, I think we can do that.
Get just enough in 2013, but they're worried about 2014. Is that true that there is a 2-year pattern in some of these droughts where we get a little problem?
I would say that ultimately where we go with this drought or what's left of it probably will depend on what happens in the Pacific Basin. Right now we do not have El Nino. We don't have La Nina. And for that reason, other factors have been driving the spring weather that we've been seeing. One of the big factors has been a North Atlantic blocking high pressure system. That really was the ultimate reason for this cool, wet spring that we've had. It effectively blocked storms from moving very quickly, and it drew all the cold air down. So I think it's a little too early, and I will say that USDA doesn't make official outlooks. That's the domain of the National Weather Service. But my feeling is that I think we'll be looking to the Pacific for what happens in 2014. Well, until we replenish subsoil moisture, we're going to be at risk. And so parts of the upper Midwest, and then really the further west you go, those areas are at great risk for this year and beyond if they don't replenish the subsoil moisture. It's kind of living on borrowed time. You have to get the timely rainfall. So that's kind of where we're going, I think, for this year and beyond.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much. Brad Rippey is RIPP.
EY.
EY. If you want, if you're blogging or writing articles, Brad Rippey, RIPPEY. And the correct title, Brad?
Agricultural Meteorologist, USDA.